Let's turn our attention first to Iran, where the new president, Ibrahim Raisi, has taken office. He is known as a hardline cleric. And unlike his predecessor, the more moderate Hassan Rouhani, he is close to the supreme leader Ayatollah Khamenei. The change comes as Iran faces a number of challenges: an economy crippled by US sanctions and COVID, a serious water crisis, growing nuclear tensions, regional tensions, pardon me, and overarching all of this, ongoing talks to restore the JCPOA, the 2015 nuclear deal. To get a sense of how the new president might approach these problems, we're joined this morning by Sharam Akhbazadeh, Professor of Middle East and Central Asian Politics at Deakin University. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Could you tell us a little more, please, about this man we need to know more about, President Raisi, and his background?
Well, I think the most important point is that he is a very conservative leader. He hasn't been a politician. In fact, he doesn't really have much experience in matters of state. He has been very close to the supreme leader. His experience has been in the judiciary. He has been deputy prosecutor. He has been appointed judge, the supreme judge, the head of the judiciary arm of the state in Iran. So he doesn't really have a lot of experience in matters of politics, so to speak, which does worry me, because he hasn't demonstrated or indicated any vision for his presidency.
No vision. I know you want to come back to that. So he's played the game of he's played the game of staying close to people who matter for many, many years. He's been blacklisted by the US for his actions as deputy prosecutor of Iran in the mid-80s, when scores, it's a terrible story actually, of political prisoners were executed, and he had plans for far more until another colleague, I think the president Montazeri at the time, he intervened and said, "I'm appalled that you're thinking about this."
Yes, there have been reports. Amnesty International has published extensive reports on the extrajudicial killing of political prisoners, and the United States has sanctioned him. So it's going to be very interesting how he's going to manage international travel, for example. I'm not sure how he's going to manage going to European capitals, if he's invited or whether he's invited.
It just gives you a bit of an... I mean, that's a long time ago, admittedly. I suppose he's got to be allowed to change a bit. But you say this is a very hollow victory that he won. You were writing in Al Jazeera, because less than 50% of Iranians voted. They usually have a higher turnout than that.
Elections in Iran are usually quite popular, especially the regime sees election participation as a vote of confidence in the system as a whole. So the supreme leader has been out encouraging and asking everyone to attend the elections and vote, even if they don't like him. So he was quite frank in his statements. And generally speaking, elections have been much better subscribed, a higher participation rate. And Raisi ran for presidency one other time, one last time. He was defeated soundly. I think he was within the 20% vote. He got a very low support base. Mm. This time around, participation rate was below 50%, which does send a very serious message to the leadership in Iran. And in that participation rate, Raisi got just over 60% of the vote. So even then, he is not the most popular president.
In a recent webinar, you said that Raisi has previously signaled he favours a, quote, resistance economy. Could you explain what that means?
I think that's the stock in trade phrase that conservatives use in relation to economy, and that's a hint against worrying too much about sanctions, worrying too much about normalizing relations with the West. Resistance economy is basically a code word for self-sufficiency and making sure Iran economy can stand on its own and not relying too much on external trade. It is a very, I guess, hollow slogan. The regime, the supreme leader, is very much aware of the need for Iran to engage in international trade, to open up its economy, to attract foreign investment, because the regime sees sanctions as a serious existential threat.
Right.
So pushing for a resistance economy is really something you would say when you're in opposition.
Well, quite. And therefore, how do you think he will react to the suggestion of continuing on these negotiations to restore the JCPOA? He's signaled he's open to continuing them, though maybe on under specific terms. What do you make of it?
I think, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, he has been critical of nuclear talks. The conservatives in Iran have seen the nuclear deal as a sign of weakness. They have seen it as Iran giving up too much of its authority and power for very little in return. And we have to acknowledge that the nuclear deal came with a very strict and stringent inspection regime, which is way over and above any other inspection regime that is imposed in any nuclear agreement. Mm. So this was quite a significant agreement to sign. That was when he was in opposition. Now that he is coming, now that he has come to office, he has indicated that, yes, he will abide by the rules of the agreement, just because I think the supreme leader has made it very clear they need Iran to come out of isolation, especially economically. Mm-hmm. Iranian financial sector is completely cut off from the international economy, which means Iran cannot sell its oil. If Iran can't sell its oil, how can the economy survive? So he is prepared to abide by the rules, but he doesn't want any additional items to be incorporated in the nuclear deal.
Now, could I, I'm just looking at my time, regional tensions, please, particularly with Israel, but also with this extraordinary advance of the Taliban?
Yes.
What would you, you know, how will that put pressure on them?
But huge pressure. Regional tension has been an issue for Iran, and I think Saudi Arabia and Israel have been seriously challenging the nuclear deal, and they have been pushing for a much more expansive agreement with Iran because they criticize Iran's expansionist foreign policies, Iran's connections with Hezbollah, with various militia paramilitary organizations in the region, is seen as Iranian expansionism. So Israel, Saudi Arabia, and many others have been very, very critical. The situation in Afghanistan is a whole new unexpected challenge, because Iran has in fact been building ties and supporting the Taliban to some extent, which is quite ironic because Iran was hedging its bets. Iran was supporting the government in Kabul as well as supporting the Taliban. The aim was to undermine the United States and make sure that the U.S. is not going to use Afghan territory as a staging ground to attack Iran. Iran, I don't think, even imagined, could even imagine that the Taliban could come to power so fast. Yes.
And, of course, it shares big borders, doesn't it, with Afghanistan?
Significant borders. Iran nearly went to war with the Taliban when they were in power. Taliban have a very sectarian view and are known to have targeted Shia communities in Iran that have links with Iran, in Afghanistan, that have links with Iran. So,
because they're Sunni, of course. Yes. Look, I just want, before I let you go, there have been severe water shortages in the southwest of the country, which seems to have led to quite a lot of domestic turbulence. Could you just tell us about this, please?
Well, Khuzestan, south of Iran, is extremely oil-rich, but also very, very poor and underdeveloped. This goes on for decades and decades. This is not something new. But tensions have flared up. There is water shortage, and the people blame the government for its inefficiency and for lack of management. And this kind of public outrage flares up every now and then. A couple of years ago, it was about the shortage of chicken and the soaring prices. So these things, unfortunately, flare up every now and then. And the regime's response is to really crack down on them using the security forces.
Well, I wondered whether the COVID, because they're having a very nasty new episode of COVID. And initially, I don't know whether they're still doing it, they blocked using any of the vaccines produced overseas.
Well, they don't have vaccines, a lot of vaccines from overseas, but they do have vaccines from China. And Iran is producing its own vaccine.
But the numbers are growing, deaths are growing too.
The health system in Iran has already collapsed. There are basically patients outside because there are outside hospitals because there are no rooms, there are no beds in hospitals. And the Delta strand has completely decimated the Iranian health system. The same stories we heard in India about the shortage of oxygen capsules is going on in Iran. It's a nightmare.
Yes. All right. Look, thank you for giving us that little foretaste, and no doubt we'll be returning to this story as the Iranians cope with what's happening in Afghanistan as well. As you say, the speed of it is sort of breathtaking, tragically. Mm. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Sharam Akhbazadeh from Deakin University, where he's Professor of Middle East and Central Asian Politics.